Welcome everyone to Parashat Shavua. Apologies to begin with. I'm going to keep this a bit short today because I just got back yesterday from Israel after an amazing trip, Baruch Hashem, and I'm really under the jet lag influence. So I'm going to keep it a little bit shorter today, and hopefully get back to a proper half an hour or close to that next week in Mirtz Hashem. So Parashas Emor. First of all, it's always connected because Parsha Emor is the one Parsha that has the mitzvah of Sfiras Omer, of counting the Omer, because the Torah talks about all the different Yomim Tovim, and it's always read between Pesach and Shavuos. So it's beautiful that the mitzvah Sfiras Omer always is read during the Omer. But also, it's read in proximity, and this week, quite close, the day after. This is the week of Parsha Emor, and Friday, of course, is Lag BaOmer, which is the special day of the Omer, 33rd day of the Omer, and the Yahrzeit of the Rashbi. But back to the beginning of the parasha talks about the mitzvahs of Kohanim. What a Kohen can do, what a Kohen can't do, and so on. And the mitzvah of Kohanim, Torah says, first of all, who they can marry. A Kohen is holy and has special roles and a special sort of spiritual in context that it needs to live in. And therefore, a Kohen can't marry a divorcee, for example, can't marry a convert, and so on and so forth. And then we have also the mitzvahs that a kohen cannot become tameh, not become impure, except for two relatives like father and mother and so on. Then we also have this idea of a kohen is able to do things that another person can't do. So, for example, truma. So let me just explain. In the agricultural society of Eretz Yisrael, especially at times when people were pure and so on, nowadays the mitzvah is done a bit differently, but in the olden days, when a person grew crop, the first thing had to be separated was truma. Truma was holy and had to be eaten when it was pure. If it can be contaminated in any way, it could not be eaten, it has to be burnt or whatever the case is. But if it was pure, and also the person eating it had to be tahor, had to be pure, and it must be eaten only by a kohen, only by a kohen. However, we learn in the Torah and in Halacha that if someone marries a kohen, so for example, a woman is not a kohen, a woman not a kohen, or even if she doesn't come from a kohen, if a woman eats truma, if a woman marries a kohen, then that woman can eat truma as well. We also learn that if a kohen has a evet, a servant, a slave, that he bought, that he purchased, so to speak, that evet, even though the evet is not a kohen, but that Eved could also eat Truma as well. So I want to share with you a little idea that the Lubavitcher Rebbe says in a Sicha. I'm going to leave this parsha for a second and come back to it in a moment. The Gemara says like this. The Gemara says that when it talks about the importance of making a bracha over one's food, right? The Gemara says, Kol hanene me'olam hazeh b'loy bracha. If anyone has benefit from this world without making a bracha first, it's like a person who desecrated or misused. There's a concept called mo'al, me'ila. Me'ila means when a person uses something holy for his own personal use, and that's considered very bad. So if a person has benefit from this world without making a bracha, it's like the person was mo'al. He misused and abused the things that are sacred to Hashem. As it says, L'Hashem ha'oretz, everything belongs to Hashem, everything's in Hashem's world, the consecration, the sacredness of Hashem's world. And if we're eating without making a bracha, it's like abusing that holiness, just like the din of Me'ila. When you use something holy, like a korban or something that's consecrated, use it for your own personal use. Question is, how does a bracha help then? For example, let's say a non-Kohen, right? A non-Kohen can't eat Truma. Truma is holy. Only a Kohen can eat it, right? So if I pick up the Truma and I make a bracha, is that going to help? It doesn't help. If it's holy, it's holy. I can't eat it. So how does it help to make a bracha if everything belongs to Hashem and eating it is like desecrating the holiness of Hashem's belongings, so to speak? How does a bracha help? So he explains that we have to go back to this halacha of truma. that an eved is allowed to eat truma. Very strange thing. It's not even related to the kohen. Just a servant of the kohen, a slave of the kohen. But yet he can eat truma. Why? Because the pasuk says kinyan kaspoi, that the eved is considered the acquisition of the kohen's money. In other words, the eved belongs to the kohen. And because the eved belongs to the kohen, it becomes an extension of the kohen, even though the eved himself is not a kohen at all. But it becomes an extension of the kohen. And therefore is allowed to eat truma. It explains the same idea. What is a bracha? When we make a bracha, we acknowledge and reveal and connect to this idea that Baruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem is our God, Melech Ha'olam is the king of the entire universe. In other words, we recognize that we are under the rule and we belong to Hashem. In other words, when we make a bracha, what we're really doing is we're exposing and really revealing this idea that we are the Eved of Hashem. We belong to Hashem like an Eved belongs to the Kohen. And therefore, just like an Eved belongs to the Kohen, is allowed to eat truma because he's under the ownership of the Kohen, so too, when we make a bracha and we recognize and we acknowledge that we are Eved to Hashem, we're an Eved to Hashem, and therefore we're allowed to eat Hashem's food. We're allowed to have benefit from Hashem's world, just like the Eved can eat truma. So now we understand the whole thing. If a person eats without making a bracha, which means he has not yet recognized that that Hashem is Melech Ha'ilam, then it's like a non-kohen eating truma. In other words, you're eating something that belongs to holiness, that you're not holy, and therefore you shouldn't be able to do it. You're desecrating the holiness of Hashem's world. But if you make a bracha by acknowledging Hashem is Melech Ha'ilam, and therefore he becomes the king, and you are his subject, you are his servant, therefore, then now you become the Eved of Hashem. You're allowed to eat truma like a kohen, like the Eved of a kohen could eat truma of a kohen. That's one idea. I want to share with you another beautiful idea. The Torah says that a kohen cannot become tamei, right? But le'oviv le'imoy ule'oviv, says for his mother and his father and his brothers, and so he can become tamei, can become impure. That's a kohanim. You know, not that they're going to the oil by the cemetery and so on, all these things, but they can go for their parents and their sisters, brother, whatever. Says the Evan Ezra says, why does it say le'imoy ule'oviv, mother and then father? He says, because in the majority of cases, much if that's technically scientifically true today, but the majority, it certainly was in olden times, majority of cases, the longevity of males is more than the females. In other words, men live longer than women. I know in my own family, my grandfather, he came from Europe. There was a lot of poverty, and women also sometimes died in childbirth and so on. Both my grandparents, him and his wife, their mothers died very, very young. Anyway, that's what he says. And therefore, because it's more common for a kohen's mother to pass away before the kohen's father, therefore it says in the pasuk le'imoy ula'oviv. So that's what the Evan Ezra says. The problem with that is, there's a question on this Evan Ezra, because in a few psukim later, it talks about the Kohen Gadol, but he's not supposed to become Tomei even for relatives. The Kohen Gadol cannot, the high priest cannot become Tomei even for relatives. And there the Pasuk says, Le'oviv ule'imo lo yitamei, he cannot become Tomei for his father and for his mother. So it shows you the order, it doesn't say the order first. In other words, not necessarily the Tumah of the mother comes first, because over there it says Le'oviv ule'imoy, the father, and then for his father and his mother, he may not become Tomei, but it puts the father before the mother. So there was a goyim called Rabbi Yankele Gesundheit from Varsha, from Warsaw, and he explained it in the following way. He says, very simple. Big difference between a regular kohen and a kohen gadol. The halacha of the kohen gadol is, when a kohen gadol dies, his son becomes a kohen gadol. If he's eligible, the preference goes to his son. Else he fills the shoes of his son, which means that by a kohen gadol, for a person to be a kohen gadol, the first encounter with tumah will always be the father. Even if his mother died before his father, that means his mother died, his father was still a kohen gadol. So he's not the kohen gadol. As a kohen gadol, as in terms of the halachas that pertain to the kohen gadol, his father always dies first. The first tumah of a parent that he will encounter is the father. And that's what by the regular kohen it says le'imo lo'ovi, but by the kohen gadol it becomes lo'ovi v'le'imo, because really the first encounter of tumah is always the father, because that's when he became a kohen gadol. Which by this we can also explain an interesting thing. There's a halacha in Gemara Makkos and in the Torah that if someone kills inadvertently b'shogeg, then the person has to go to an orei miklat, to the cities of refuge. And if it's established that it was like manslaughter, in other words, he was irresponsible to a certain degree, even though it was completely unintentional, there is a punishment in the Torah. That punishment is to stay in the orei miklat until the kohen gadol passes away. Says the Gemara that the mothers of the kohen gadol used to go around to the orei miklat and give food and nice things to the people there. Why? To prevent them davening for the death of their sons. Imagine a guy stuck in the orei miklat. He davens to Hashem that the kohen gadol should die already so he can go free. By the way, parenthetically, this shows the amazing power of tefillah. We're talking about someone that is in orei miklat. That means he killed. He needs an atonement, and nevertheless, he prays inappropriately. You don't pray for someone's death, and he does. So it could have an effect. We say that tefillah is so powerful that it can have an effect. It needs the mother of the kohen gadol to come and provide him with sustenance and food and things they shouldn't, to make sure they should be on side and they shouldn't daven for the death of their son, the kohen gadol. And the question of this answer: why only the mothers of the kohen gadol? Why not the fathers of the kohen gadol? The answer is very simple, because generally speaking, the way the structure is supposed to be done, you don't have a father of a kohen gadol, because father of the kohen gadol was the previous kohen gadol, and therefore she should be the kohen gadol. So therefore, when a kohen gadol is a kohen gadol, he probably doesn't have a father. Therefore, the father doesn't come and give food and stuff to the inmates, so to speak. They shouldn't daven. So who is it? The mother, because the mother could still be around, because you can only be a kohen gadol once your father, if he was the kohen gadol, if he dies first, and then your person becomes a kohen gadol. That's just a couple of thoughts on this week's parsha, and I wish everyone a good day and ultimately a good Shabbos, and also a Freilich, a very happy Lag BaOmer, which is this Friday, the yard site, the holy yard site of the Rashbi. It's a very special day, a day of brachas, a day of power, ruchnistic power. So everyone should tap into the energy of the day, and only have good things. All the best.